Who's up for talking nonsense?
Who's up for talking nonsense? I'm almost yelling, but not quite.
We're always immediately checking the sound levels as we start. it's a tricky game every time.
It is a tricky game. We've invested in a new microphone, though.
It's so exciting.
All you listeners out there, in case you haven't noticed, we have a new microphone.
We do. It's so exciting. We're basically Joe Rogan now.
Yeah, we're going to have to start streaming. We'll take us a video. You'll have to watch our YouTube of us talking in the microphone.
We did have a listener who recommended we start a YouTube channel, so.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Yeah, we had another in person, a drive-by shouting.
Uh-huh.
And one of the on-the-street Debbies said, "You guys need to get two microphones." So we're still at one microphone, but it's a better microphone.
We do have two microphones, but we don't know how to use both microphones at the same time yet.
Yes, thank you. That's a good clarity. So Debbie, we did listen to you. We now have two microphones. Unfortunately, we only know how to use one.
We spent too many hours. You've spent too many hours. Greasy Rapidian trying to get the second microphone to work alongside the first.
I know. So maybe if you're out there listening, Best Buy, we could use a sponsor. Ooh. That would get us a new microphone and a new computer, because this computer is almost as old as the American Jazz.
It really is. It could be in a museum about computers.
I did watch an Antique Roadshow, and they had the original Apples, and you made them yourself. You soldered them together or whatever.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. $666.66.
At the time or now?
At the time. I can't remember when it was, but it was like 1980 or so, right?
Okay.
And it was just the motherboard. You had to buy a separate monitor, a separate keyboard, and it had a cassette player that ran it. So you put cassettes in that ran the board.
Whoa.
And how much on the Antique Roadshow do you think just the motherboard sold for? They sold 200 of them back in the day.
Oh, so they're pretty rare.
They're pretty rare. They can account for 63 of them.
I was going to say $667. It is appreciated. None.
It's gone up 34 cents.
Yes.
No, this was just the motherboard they were selling.
Yeah.
One recently sold in Germany that had everything, the monitor, the tape player, the keyboard, plus the instruction manual and a letter from Steve Jobs explaining your new computer.
Wow.
And but that was one. We're just going for the motherboard.
Okay. How much was the motherboard? I'm a real Antiques Roadshow novice. I have no idea what anything
just
is worth.
Just go out on a limb.
$5,000.
$5,000. No.
Too high or too low?
If it was in our exponential scales,
yeah,
it would have been close to $5,000.
Okay.
But it was $150,000 for the motherboard.
Oh my God!
The one with the monitor and all the other stuff recently sold in Germany for $750,000.
My question is, sold to who? This is always my question. Did you see that one? That story about, we don't want to get distracted with this. This is not an Antiques Roadshow podcast. But there was a story
sponsored
about a guy
Best
who
Buy.
Had a, yes, please.
Please, Best Buy.
Sponsored by Best Buy, please.
Best Buy, please.
No, I saw a story about a guy who had this like old blanket.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
Millions.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was just sitting in his house, and it was like a blanket with a stripe, but it was like, you know.
But he saw it on Antique Roadshow, and he said, "I think I have that same blanket."
And it sold for like $1 million.
And he cried. Cried.
Yeah,
cried.
It was a very affecting video.
It was really lovely.
But who bought that $1 million blanket? Because it's always exciting when you're like, oh my God, this thing I didn't know was worth any money is now worth all this money. But who's the collector on the other side is my question.
Okay, well, so we're going to get way out in the woods here before we get to the King of Silvers. I was watching Jay's Garage. Jay Leno's Garage.
Oh, okay.
And so it's Jay's Garage,
I guess,
right?
And that's so, the answer.
No, so and so here's the funny part. Because Jay, the one I watched recently, this guy brought in, because Jay not only has his cars that he shows off, and I don't know how many cars he has, you know, 200 or whatever, mm-hmm. and how many motorcycles, I don't mm-hmm. know how many. He's had too many, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now he has other people bringing in their cars, and I like to watch it because he has all kinds of people bringing in their cars. So I saw an episode on Gremlins. This guy collects Gremlins, and okay. so he brought in two Gremlins. Celica, somebody brought in their Celica, that they collect Celicas. One guy collects original Volkswagens only, unrestored. And so he brought in this old beat-up 55 Volkswagen that, you know, is mm-hmm. almost mostly original, right? And so, but this guy on the recent episode brought in his 1937 Talbot Lagos. And they made 14 of them. And it's this beautiful Art Deco teardrop shape. And I have no idea what the car is worth, right? There's, I think, 9 of them left of the 14, right? Just unbelievable. It's just gorgeous. And so you can see Jay Leno kind of just like very daintily walking around. And at one point he says in the thing, cars like this, this is rich guy money.
Jay Leno said this is rich guy money.
A man who owns 200 cars, some of which are worth millions of dollars, is saying this is rich guy money to own this car. And my favorite part of the video is the guy lets him drive it. Mm-hmm. And so they go out like on Hollywood Boulevard and they're driving the car. And Jay can't shift it because it's got this crazy mechanism. And you see the guy looking at him, this guy who looks like he's about 75, and you think he's having a heart attack because it's his priceless car that is being driven very poorly by Jay Leno. And at one point, Jay says, I think the transmission is just, it's just not shifting gears, but that's an easy fix. And then I read the comment section. Yeah, just stopping at AutoZone, Jay. I'm sure they have the part.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And so, again, I'm sure, back to your question, who buys this?
Mm-hmm.
So Jay Leno is saying, wow, look at that car. I wonder who could buy those cars. Those are rich man cars.
Yeah.
And behind him is this, you know, Bugatti that's worth, you know, $2 to $3 million. And he's like, well, at least, you know, I'm just buying regular guy cars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with the blanket.
Yeah.
The guy that bought the blanket was like, well, this is just like regular guy blankets. The rich guys are buying those.
Oh, they're buying like those crazy multi, like four, five.
Yeah, 20 to 30 million dollar blankets.
Yeah. So this is just chump change blankets.
This is just regular guy blankets. Like Jay Leno. He's just regular guy car collector.
Crazy. Anyway.
Anyway, anarcho-syndicalist, if you're out there, if you buy that International Scout, call Jay Leno.
Mm-hmm.
Call him. Okay, should we get to the...
Yeah.
Who's our real sponsor today?
The episode today is brought to you all by the Nutley Diner.
The Nutley Diner?
Yes, it's a charming little diner in Nutley, New Jersey.
We're expanding outside of the 6-block radius of our other sponsors.
We're continuing to stay hyper-local, but just in new places. Yeah. So check out the Nutley Diner in Nutley, New Jersey.
No waiting.
No waiting around.
Beautiful old diner.
They invest heavily in Halloween decorations.
Oh, they also grow their own tomatoes in the parking strip.
So you could have a Nutley tomato grown in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. How could you say no?
How could you say no?
That sounds like a great deal.
I know. So get the salsa or the BLT.
Yep, I think so. And
I don't think the Taylor comes ham from the parking lot. Yeah. What is the ham?
Taylor ham.
Taylor ham, yeah. I had the Taylor ham. I'm not a big fan.
No.
So
it's just a roll of... I'm not a big fan of ham in general. Sorry to insult the ham board. But
yeah, but bacon people out there, you can sponsor us too.
Yes, we'd love to be sponsored by bacon. Okay. But yeah.
Nutley Diner.
Thank you, Nutley Diner.
Both of us, the Greasy Rapidian and the American Jezebel, have eaten there at separate occasions.
Yes, and you know the Greasy Rapidian knows his diners.
I know my way around a greasy spoon.
Yes, you do. And this is a good type of greasy
this
spoon.
This is a good type. This is not unidentified yellow gelatinous grease. This is lard.
I don't think the Nutley Diner wants us to say the words yellow gelatinous grease.
No, that happened at New Beginnings.
We'd like to. Yes, that was not the Nutley Diner.
We are not sponsored by them. Okay, we're almost out of time.
Oh, now that it's already gone off the rails. We did some solid planning.
Some serious talking on. This is some serious nonsense.
This is
you
real
are getting
nonsense.
Your money worth. This may be
the gold most standard. Nonsensical.
This is the gold standard of talking nonsense.
So did we have any agree to disagree in the last couple of weeks?
We did have an agree to disagree. This was emailed to us by Godmother Debbie. And Godmother Debbie took exception to our character.
It was your.
My. I thought we were a team. Thanks for getting my back there. You are no...
I have no beef.
Biagio.
I have
you
no...
You are no Biagio.
I have, personally, I have no beef with Jim Carrey.
All right, I'm checking the levels, and I'm gonna have to move in the other room. The new mic is really, really bringing me in. But she took some exception to my characterization of our cutie pie heroine from the last episode having a likable, as hyper malleable face, almost like a likable Jim Carrey, is what I said. And Godmother Debbie wrote, "Likable Jim Carrey, defend your words." And then we have a new Instagram follower as well.
Or is there our one Twitter? We now have one Twitter follower. Shout out to Bruce Almighty 420. We love that you're following.
And so, in that vein, I'm just going to have to say, Jim Carrey, likable? We agree to disagree. And that's to you, 420, Bruce Almighty.
Yes, and Godmother Debbie, call in and defend your position. Yeah. You're pro. We can have a debate, pro and con. Yeah. Jim Carrey.
Yeah. I think the counter argument is actually the one that needs to be defended.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, why would Jim Carrey be unlikable?
Mm-hmm.
I think the question really is, why would Jim Carrey be likable?
So,
Godmother Debbie.
Godmother Debbie, or anyone else, any other Jim Carrey stands out there wants to call in. Or if you just want to send us an angry email about it, you can email us at AmericanJezebel.GreaseyRapidian at
might be Debbie right there.
gmail.com. Or could it be? Is he finally calling us back?
Joel Courtney? It was not Joel Courtney.
Someday we'll get him. Call us, Joel.
Call us, Joel. We could yuck it up with you. We seriously would.
Waiting to yuck it up with Joel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Where else could they contact us?
But you could also contact us like Bruce Almighty 420. You could give us a follow on Twitter at American Jezebel, or you could follow us on Instagram. Our Instagram is blowing up. I recently posted a visual representation done by the Greasy Rapidian of our exponential scale rating system.
Oh.
So you could check out a visual on that on our Instagram at American_Jezebel. So check us out on any of those platforms.
Oh, and I recently took a photo of me in the studio here.
Oh, so we're going to have to post.
I think we should post
We're going to have to post some more.
Yeah, I might take a picture of you today.
Okay.
Talking some nonsense and we can post.
Do some posting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you get to see part of my face.
Yeah, I think that's we'll keep the mystique alive.
Oh, the mystique is just you could cut it with a knife. A machete.
So, Biagio. Speaking of Biagio, should we talk about the movie that we
watched? Let's talk about the movie. What movie did we watch?
So it's your turn to give me a description of the movie. This is the 2013 film directorial debut of Jordan Voight Roberts. The Kings of Summer. What was The Kings of Summer about, according to the internet?
According to IMDb, because we could not get this on Netflix, so we went off book. And
they're still not sponsoring us, so they're still not. Really took a dive away from Netflix. Yeah.
Kings of Summer. Well, let me tell you, Kings of Summer is about three teenagers. They carry out a plan to leave their dysfunctional parents, build a house in the woods, and live off the land. The end.
Okay.
So?
How accurate do we feel like that was? It was three teenagers.
Yes, it was.
And they did go and live in the woods to escape their parents.
They did carry it. We don't know about Biagio.
We don't know.
There's a lot not to know about
Biagio. We don't know anything about Biagio.
No, we know nothing about Biagio.
He may or may not be able to read.
Yep.
He may or may not have cystic fibrosis.
He may or may not have a gender.
Yeah, he kind of thinks of himself as not having a gender, right? He owns a machete that he just carries around a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has a dad.
We see his dad's chin and neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
He speaks Spanish.
Yeah. There's not much to know about Biagio.
He has a real... He bought new clothes for the voyage into the woods. He is a cipher. Biagio is a real cipher.
Where's Biagio? Forget about where is Joe. Where's Biagio?
Where's Biagio?
I can see you, Biagio.
They were like 2 inches away from each other. It's right in his face.
Anyway,
I would say that's pretty accurate of what happens in the movie. the broad scale description of what happens. Three teenagers go into the woods, and they try to live off the land to escape their parents.
Their dysfunctional parents.
Yeah. I don't know how dysfunctional Patrick's parents are. I don't know if I would call his parents dysfunctional as much as, like, their relationship, but they're endlessly fascinated by everything that he does.
I think they're somewhat
over-involved.
They're over-involved in everything. The ciabatta, the studs in the wall, they're over-involved in every little thing. So I think
they love the mundane. They're fully invested in the mundane.
Maybe dysfunctional is not the correct term.
Yeah, because I wouldn't describe
them unfunctional.
Or, like, so functional that there's, like, nothing beyond, like, the functioning of things, you know? Like, if you can get super psyched about rustic ciabatta versus regular ciabatta and, like, think you're just going wild by going for rustic, I think that that's going to be more, like, hyper-functional. Yeah.
Hyper-functional. But that's just nitpicking.
I think this is a pretty decent description of what happens in the movie.
I would say
it's one of the strongest we've had.
Pretty decent as
well. Yeah. Is there anything else kind of broad scale that we want to talk about with the movie first?
Well, should we just lay out, like, kind of a big strokes of how the movie happened?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of the last couple days of school, if not mm-hmm. the last day of school.
Mm-hmm. Beginning of summer.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And he finishes his birdhouse that morning.
It's a terrible birdhouse. I'm impressed that they were able to pull together such a functioning house after the birdhouse he built.
Uh-huh.
I think that's just a testament to the power of teamwork.
Well, they actually went to the house and looked at it, remember? They went to the construction site and they did some analysis of how construction
during one
works.
Of the, like, extended music video style montages that happens over the course
it.
Of the movie.
I loved it.
Yeah, I liked that one.
We'll get to that later as we compare it to All the Boys I Loved.
Uh-huh.
Where the girl was the star of the movie and mm-hmm. how that led to lots of talking,
mm-hmm.
writing letters, mm-hmm. and all kinds of things.
And the boys involved a lot of banging pipes in the
banging
woods.
Banging pipes, throwing sticks, cracking trees, jumping in water.
Yep. Yeah. Wrestling.
Wrestling, yep.
Yep.
Looking, stealing stuff.
Just going wah, 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 with a sword. Yeah.
Yes.
So he takes his birdhouse in, but he's finish it super late, and his history star, Craig something, is not
shop
impressed.
Teacher.
Yeah, the shop teacher's not impressed.
And he gets invited to a party, goes to the party, mm-hmm. has unpleasant interactions with his dad, decides he's going to run away, talks his friend into running away with him, and mm-hmm. Biagio comes, and nobody's sure why Biagio's there. They even say, why is he here? I don't know.
I'm afraid to ask him to leave.
So, but Biagio, we can't even talk about in terms of any rules around Biagio. And then they live in the woods for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then his crush, he invites her to the house.
Mm-hmm.
The typical boy mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And then he invites
her
to the house.
Because the only thing that the woods house was lacking was a woman's touch.
Yeah. And boy, that's not what it was lacking. And then the old kingdom starts to unravel.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the climactic scene at the end. And, you know, kind of the pitting the two boys against each other over the girl. And mm-hmm. then what's Biagio's role? What's the parents' role?
Mm-hmm.
And we all end up together at the hospital in the end. Mm-hmm. And then the movie ends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of we're given just the bare bones. We're not going into details because we're going to talk about different aspects of it.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to get mired in the details. We have too much other nonsense. We got Antique Roadshow and Jay's Garage to talk about.
We've wasted all of our movie talking time on Jay's Garage and Antiques Roadshow.
You guys need to take care of your own movie talking.
Welcome back to Blanket Talk.
Who's up for talking blankets?
We're talking authentic Navajo blankets today.
Not those cheap $100,000 to $200,000 ones.
So, Greasy Rapidian, you wanted to talk a little bit about the title specifically of the film, The Kings of Summer.
I did, because I'm super excited about why things are called what they're called.
And I was actually just thinking, I want to hear your thoughts on it, but, you know, as you were just describing the bare bones of the plot and the idea that the then inviting his crush in Correct. Starts to blow the whole thing up. And Correct. We've already mentioned running around with, there's a lot of running around with swords in the woods. but I was like, wow, it was kind of a classic Camelot style situation Correct. Too. Yeah. So yeah, there was a real, Guinevere just blew the whole thing up. Mm. Yeah. Lancelot and Arthur were just having a great time in the woods, living their lives. And Guinevere had to come, and she came between.
And I'm thinking what we're going to say. Biagio is Parsifal. The fool.
Oh, is he? Okay.
He is the fool, the wise fool, isn't he?
Yeah. Or is he, who's the one who, who's the one who's like, now we're in Camelot talk. Yeah. Who's the one who gets the grail because he's the one who's the purest? Right? Isn't there?
Well, Parsifal goes to get the grail. But when he goes to the Grail Castle, he doesn't ask the Grail King the question, which is Biagio's question at the end, right? He comes, says to his father, how should I stay with my friend or not, right? Because the Grail question is, what ails thee, brother? Mm-hmm. And so the Grail King has been injured, right? And he's very ill. And when Parsifal comes to the castle, he doesn't ask because his mother has told him not to, right? So he just follows. He's the fool, and he does what his mother tells him. And so, which is interesting in this analogy as well, right? Because there's only one mother in the whole of the show.
There is, yeah.
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 And she treats him like a fool.
This is
a Grail quest.
It is.
And I know I didn't think that, but you are doing great. This is not nonsense. This is serious.
Yeah, okay.
But then Parsifal doesn't ask him, and then he has to go on his long journey, you know, and visit the wise men and the widow and all the people that he has to visit on the Castle of Wonders, all the things he has to do before he can go back to the castle. Mm. And then he can ask the question. And at that point, then he becomes the Grail King.
Okay.
Right? And so the other ones, I don't know who you're thinking about.
I can't remember.
Gawain or Kai.
It might have been Gawain. You know? I don't remember.
And so like the boyfriend would be Kai, you know, Kay. You know, and
Eugene Cordero, the boyfriend? The singing boyfriend?
No, the...
Oh, the gross boyfriend, Paul.
Yeah, like the 30-year-old
boyfriend. Yeah, the 30, yeah. That's what I mean by the gross boyfriend. That's creeping around the high school. The high school creeper.
And so he's just like a... You know, I'm going to take the stuff I want. Give me that beer, right? Mm-hmm. That's Kai. Mm-hmm. Okay. However you say it. That's that knight. So the knights are all there, right?
Yeah. It's. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Because the brother, I wouldn't even go so far as to say that the brother, his sister's boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
The brother-in-law, I was going to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, that he might even be Gawain. The one, what do women want?
Oh, he.
And Gawain, you know.
Uh-huh.
They want their sovereignty.
And he gives her
He does. He gives her sovereignty.
Yeah.
Huh.
I did not. We've just realized now that the Kings of Summer is a really nuanced allegory. And
I'm not going with that answer to the title,
Let's come back around to the title. I could run with you. I got a little distracted running down that path. But
I'm running with you, though. I think that's a very viable
reading of this film.
So, Queen's College, if you're listening, that's the depth of the scholar you're going to get.
She's pulling it out, yeah.
She is just pulling out, you know, Wolfram von Asheram's version of Parsifal to recruit. So, I was going to say that the Kings of Summer has to do with, in terms of, because I'm looking at it as, this is a boys movie because we're in a boys trilogy.
We are.
So, what does it mean to be a boy? So, you have... I'm going to go with the four ages of man. You have a spring, a summer, a fall, and a winter.
Okay.
Right? And so your spring is your young years. You know, I would say maybe just these guys, like 0 to 14. So these guys have just passed
the bicycle spring. Olympics days. Or yes. Send a turtle to space days.
Exactly. Yes, they've passed those days. And they are now entering the summer of their life. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's... They are the kings of summer, whereas the dad is in the fall and heading into the winter of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so who are the kings? The kings are those of summer, because the dad is not the king.
No.
Neither dad is the king.
No.
No adult male, right? The shop teacher is not the king.
No.
You know, who is the king? The king are those that are in that little window of summer. where boys get to be boys. They go out in the woods and bang on the pipes and throw sticks and build a house out of scrap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're fully expressing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stop fully expressing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the title is about.
I like that.
That's what I'm going with.
I fully buy that. I think that's a great argument for why it's called that.
Okay.
Yeah, because it, I mean, it's, and it fits so well with like everything that the movie is saying.
Yes.
Just like that, and the way that it's shot, and the music, yes. and the lights, and the cinematography, and the extended video, music video montages of them doing those things. Yes, because they are the, yeah, they are the kings of the those woods in the summer.
Which brings yeah. us to...
Does that bring us perfectly around to our new segment?
Our new segment, it does.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling, new segment. Now I'm doing the music this week. Okay, what is our, what's our new segment?
Well, our new segment, so back when I was a young king of summer.
When you were in the summer of your days.
When I was in the summer of my life, right? So this would have been back in the days. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to say what years they were, but they were in those years, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you just do the math. There was a show on TV here in Denver, and maybe it was across the nation, called Dialing for Dollars. And it was just a random show. I can remember that occasionally they'd say, let's play Dialing for Dollars. And then they would have a number on the screen, at the TV screen, of the dollars. $16. And then they would dial a number. And if you answered, they said, hey, this is Dialing for Dollars. And you said, $48. You would win the money off the screen. And so I used to watch this with my grandmother.
Did they ever dial your number?
I never got called.
Ugh.
Yeah, so our new segment is not Dialing for Dollars, so don't be looking at your TV, but it's Dialing for Debbies. And so if you, like Godmother Debbie, might like to call in, you can send us an email, and then we'll contact you and you can call in. So we have our first Dialing for Debbie.
Do you know the correct count and amount?
Well, join us each weekday morning starting at 9 for Dialing for Dollars right here on Channel 13.
We may be calling you.
877-4348. This is Johnny Gilbert on Dialing for Dollars on TV 13. We're live on the air right now. Are you watching television?
I just turned it off.
You just turned it off?
Yes.
It just cost you $250, Ms. Cummings. Isn't that terrible? That's exactly what we had in our jackpot, and I would have been delighted to give it to you.
Well, I would have been delighted if you've gotten it.
Well, I'll have to keep it here now, as you know, but just for talking with me on the phone, I want you to have a set of perfect nails.
The lovely and talented Debbie has called in. Shall we hear from her?
Let's do that.
Bring, bring, bring.
I've got some nonsense I'd like to talk.
All right. The lovely and talented Debbie here, ready to comment on the fabulous movie, The Kings of Summer. I love this movie. I'd seen it years ago when it first came out, and one thing I did not remember about it were all the fabulous comedians that they use as parents and side characters, police. That I loved the comedy element of it, could be serious, but not treated very lightly, coming of age story for this group of young boys, and particularly, all three of them, Joe, Patrick, and Biagi, were all in their own rights, coming to terms with what it is to be a man and what it is to grow up. So I loved the use of cinematography in this film, because when they found the secluded place in the woods where they built their very cool summer house, the cinematography was golden light. I kind of thought of it as Neverland, where in a way these boys could go and just be themselves without their parents. And as the action progressed, and we saw the boys just experiencing the wonderful hanging out aspects of being together, it was still all golden and wonderful. But in the crisis moment of the movie, when the heartbreaker Kelly girlfriend or crush, I should say, that Joe has been dreaming about and thinking about when she comes onto the scene and ends up really liking Patrick and not Joe. And then the climax, the Monopoly scene, which was interesting because it was the opposite or a replay of the Monopoly scene at the beginning of the movie. But when Joe is left alone out in paradise, out in Neverland, I felt that the cinematography all of a sudden took away that rosy glow. And there he is realizing that he's hungry. There is no more money in the strong box. Everything in the refrigerator is not fit to eat. And he has to go and kill himself a rabbit, which, and to me, that was the real arc of the story where Joe really comes to grips with growing up. What it takes to be a man, if you will. All right, that's about all I have to say.
How many kissing booths?
Yeah.
Thank you, Debbie. Thank you to the lovely and talented Debbie for being our first caller in Dialing for Debbie's.
I know, and so, you know, Dialing for Debbie's talking about the cinematography. The whole cinematography, because it is a powerful part of this movie.
Oh, definitely.
Because there's these long extended scenes of nothing happening but these boys boying around,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is important.
Mm-hmm.
And as lovely and talented Debbie said, you know, it was just so beautiful. Like when they find the place where they're going to build a house, you know, first of all, they find it in the night and it's like the moonlit, right? They were mm-hmm. lost in the woods, right?
Mm-hmm.
Parsifal. They were lost. He's just riding his horse. He's got his bicycle,
mm-hmm.
but he's just riding his horse through the forest, you uh-huh. know, aimlessly letting the reins go.
Uh-huh.
And then they come into the clearing. The next day they go back to find it, and it's just like bathed in this golden light, mm-hmm. right?
There's a lot of that golden light throughout the whole movie, right?
Until Kelly shows up.
Mmm.
And so the first time he interacts with her is at night at the party.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she comes with her friends,
uh-huh.
they stay late, right?
Yeah.
And they're sitting around at night.
Uh-huh.
And then when she comes up and he thinks she's coming to get him.
That is a great shot. I wanted to talk about that.
It is a great.
One. Yeah.
Yes. It's mm-hmm. a great shot because number one, you can just see in his face.
Yeah.
The anticipation of her coming up.
Uh-huh.
And then you don't see her. You only see like her ankles
mm-hmm.
as she steps over
mm-hmm.
and gets her his friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then they leave. And then he doesn't move. Like you just see the sun starting to
yeah.
come up. And then he hasn't moved. He's in the same position
mm-hmm.
all night long.
Yeah. That's my favorite shot of the whole movie for
yeah.
sure. I loved that one.
But then the next night when they're playing Monopoly, Kelly's
uh-huh.
there and it's dark again.
Uh-huh.
So Kelly brings the darkness into the forest.
And yet in all of his fantasies of her, it all like takes place in that golden field.
Correct.
Yes.
His fantasies are these golden, radiant
mm-hmm.
moments. And when she actually shows up,
mm-hmm.
it's darkness.
Except for the time that he's like after, the day after this happened, and he's like wandering around in the woods by himself. And then he lies down in the field and Biagio's there again. And then he walks past her and Patrick.
Yeah.
And then, and just says something to them and then keeps walking on. Then it's that same spot, or it must be close to that same spot where he and Patrick sat and drank the beers and, like, talked about, like, how they're the kings of summer.
Yeah.
And they're in, like, this really nice, like, late afternoon light. The two
yeah.
of them are bathed in the
correct.
Light. Yes.
She is.
But not him and her.
Correct.
Joe. That's what it is.
Not
Joe and Kelly.
Correct.
But Patrick and Kelly.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so thank you, lovely and talented Debbie,
yeah,
because
thank
the
you.
Cinematography is an important piece of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think there were a number of shots. Like, I loved, that's my favorite shot of the whole movie is when that whole scene takes place where you're watching him
yeah.
as the things are happening in the background. And
correct.
It's just tight on his face the whole time.
Yeah.
And I think one of the big strengths of the movie is I think his performance is really good.
Yeah.
Because I think he first, well, one of the things that I, one of the things that I always am keeping track of in these coming of age films, that is one of my pet peeves, is do the teen people playing teens look like real teens? And I think that in this case, he looks like a real teen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As does Patrick.
As does Patrick. Biagio could be...
He's no age.
Biagio could be 12 and he could be 60.
Yeah, he could be 92 and he could be 12.
Biagio is ageless. Genderless, ageless. Biagio is his own thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think
it might be my new gender pronoun.
Biagio. Well, Biagio. When the boys come by and steal his shirt in the school hallway.
Yes.
He's got like a skinny little teen boy body.
He does.
Yes. And you commented that you didn't quite believe the amount of facial hair that they were able to grow while they lived out in the woods.
Yeah, as a 15-year-old.
Yeah,
He was getting a serious stash.
I think that overall he was a very charming presence in the movie as well, and I think he carried a lot of...
And the friends that showed up, they were teenagers as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But there were a number of shots too that, again, I keep referencing that it was felt a little bit like a music video because of the lighting and the cinematography and everything, and kind of these little kind of trick shots that seem to, I think, were just him, the director playing around with things.
It's a little heavy-handed, but it's likable.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's in general how I feel, even about the cinematography in the movie.
Yeah.
I think I liked the shot of him in bed because it was both this very impressive shot and this, but it was like really well done in like how it told the story of his emotional state in that moment.
Yeah, maybe.
And yeah.
Maybe a new segment. Favorite shot of the movie.
Yes. Yeah, keep saying that. So maybe it is our new segment. Yeah.
Right, because there was some heavy-handedness to the movie.
Oh, definitely.
Like the Monopoly scene. I mean, just being so paralleled. He's smoking, he's at the cigar.
The men are talking
and how Biagio is just going to, you know, snuggle up to the alpha male. Just like the boyfriend is snuggling up to the alpha male.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so you can just see it's a little heavy handed in how they're trying to like show.
Yeah. That's definitely true across the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know? Even like, you know, and her boyfriend, who's the creepy 30-year-old, he has to be a terrible, creepy 30-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, he couldn't just be the boyfriend. So he doesn't like him because he's the boyfriend. We can all tell he's terrible.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's definitely true. Across the whole movie.
Yeah.
But I did like the moments, even like at the end, the last scene when they're, or yeah, I guess it was the last scene when they're in the cars.
Are we going to get to that?
let's
come back to that.
Because
we have key scenes, you know? And is that going to be your key scene? What do we have before we get to the key scene?
Well, the one thing I want to talk about, this is the first movie that this director made.
Yeah.
And, the people that he got to be in this movie, it's crazy. The cast of this movie is insane. I cannot get over it. There are all these people that have like one scene, like four lines, and they have all gone on to be like huge things.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the one, Biagio was on Hannah Montana. So he was already a big thing. And I don't even know what he's up to these days. I bet he's kind of a Biagio in real life.
Well, I looked him up. He's doing a lot of voice acting.
Oh, okay.
So he's the voices of a lot of cartoons.
It's funny when it seems like people get really famous for like one role, then sometimes they seem to like go into voice acting.
Yeah.
Because, the guy
Mark
from
Hamill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now he's like a really accomplished actor and really good, but he did a lot of voice acting. So I think it's the same deal, and now Nick Robinson's been in a number of things so the dad is Nick Offerman.
Yeah.
His real life wife, Megan Mullally, is the only mom in the movie who's the Patrick's mom, and she's married to Mark Evan Jackson, who is just amazing as well. Shout out to, it's our podcast shout out for this week.
Oh, nice.
Mark Evan Jackson is on The Good Place, and he hosts the official Good Place podcast. So I recommend people who are fans of the TV show The Good Place, which we should all be, in a world that it asks, you know, in the world that we live in, it's a sitcom that asks the questions, what do we owe each other, and how do we be the best people in the world, unless it's funny. But he hosts The Good Place, the podcast, which I highly recommend if you are a Good Place watcher.
Shout out.
Yes, and he has a great podcast voice.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's in it.
And he's the dad. We've got Tony Hale as the bus passenger who also lost a child. Hannibal Buress as the bus driver. With like two lines. Hannibal Buress as the bus driver. Marilyn, I don't know how to say her name, the captain. Uh-huh. She's just a great actress as well, who shows up in a bunch of things. Thomas Middleditch as the Ricky Cop, being his most Thomas Middleditch.
He's in my head. He's in my head.
Those like little curls along the side. Have you heard of The Boy Who Cried Wolf? I was a child who enjoyed a childhood on planet Earth, so yes.
Don't go to the best line before.
And then the delivery guy from the Chinese restaurant was Kumail Nanjiani. God, I mean, Allison Brie is his sister. Eugene Cordero, who is also a character on The Good Place, plays the boyfriend, the serenading boyfriend. I mean, it's just crazy. A special shout out to Lily Reinhart. It's probably her first film role, who now stars on Riverdale. She's the girl who's interested in Biagio. Yep, and now she is the star of Riverdale. And she had like 5 lines in the movie.
If any. It is the American Graffiti of our time.
It really is. Man, it's just crazy.
Everyone's
so in it. I just couldn't go anymore without just shouting out like how incredible this cast is. The lady in the 4th of July makeup who's hooking up with the guy in the river, she's a star of Schitt's Creek. All right, so let's talk about some key scenes in the movie.
Are we at key scenes? Are we at Trope Watch? Do we have any Trope Watch?
This is... So this movie doesn't take place, like, in school.
No.
And so it avoids a lot of the tropes in that way.
Yeah.
I'll shout out a first trope, though. Dead parents.
Dead parent.
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
Number one dead parent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dead mom. Specifically. Yeah. We seem to have a lot of dead moms.
A lot of dead moms.
This is not my favorite line of the movie, but when Nick Offerman and Mark Evan Jackson are fishing in the boat and talking about their kids, and he was talking about how hard it is now that his wife has died and that he was really a mama's boy, and he said, I don't know, something about his innate sense of menace seemed to charm her. That's what he's talking about his kid. His innate sense of menace seemed to charm her.
Okay, key scene for me.
Okay.
And so there's two.
All right.
Two key scenes for me. And I'm going to tie them together.
Okay.
And that is when you were just talking about them in the boat fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a suspension of disbelief to think that those two guys would do anything together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you get this discussion between these two guys in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're talking about their kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in that moment, you can see those two dads, they're two different men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of them is this lonely, miserable curmudgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is kind of this hyper-functional,
mm-hmm.
doubting,
mm-hmm.
almost emasculated in mm-hmm. some way, man.
Mm-hmm.
And so there they have these two, like, real caricatures
mm-hmm.
of these polarities of manliness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then their boys are following that same path. And so that scene sets up, like, here's who these dads are,
mm-hmm.
and our boys are just us,
mm-hmm.
which leads to the last scene of the movie.
Yeah, now I'm thinking of, like, so many things from this movie that I wanted to do yesterday. I've already forgotten, and I'm rethinking about it again, too. Yeah, and I think, I mean, this is kind of, like, I feel like maybe an obvious scene to pick out, but I think it's a good one to talk about, too, is, like, once, you know, there's this sort of build-up, right, of Joe keeps trying to get away and get away and get away, right? And he's trying all these different ways to get away, you know, trying to get his sister to let him come live with him, her and Eugene Cordero, and then running away with Biagio and Patrick. And then when he pushes Patrick away, he pushes Biagio out too, right? He doesn't even let Biagio stay, and tells Biagio, you know, sorry, I'm not more fun to be around. I really want to be alone right now. And then just pushes everybody out until he actually is alone, mm-hmm. right? And then he finally gets to the point, because one of the things that I thought was interesting
darker.
About it does.
Again, cinematography.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things that I was thinking about too, and just like in general about the movie, right? That they're these kings of summer, but they're really playing at it the whole time, right? Because they're not self-sufficient in any way. They're just walking across the highway to Boston Market whenever they actually need some food. So they're not like in any way self-sufficient. They're just playing at this independence and freedom that he like so wants. And then there's that the moment where suddenly he's out of money and he actually does, he fails to kill the rabbit or the weird possum thing earlier on that they trap. He can't kill the possum. And then he actually does manage to kill the rabbit and to open up the book about how to live in the woods. And actually, like, first it was all a game, kind of a little bit of a game that they were playing at being men and at being independent. Mm-hmm. And then he actually has this moment where he actually has to learn how to do it. Right. And then he it's so funny because he actually succeeds, right? He cooks the rabbit, he kills it, he skins it. He, you know, has this whole moment of like coming to terms with like taking the rabbit's life so that he can have the sustenance of the rabbit. And painstakingly spends all day cleaning it and cooking it and doing all of it. And then he sits down and he's got his candles lit, which is also a callback to his dad lighting the candles earlier on in the movie. But obviously that's also where his light source comes from, which is one of my questions. So I was like, where is all this light coming from inside it when it was dark? And then he puts that mask down across the table from himself because he's been pushing everybody away and pushing everybody away. And now he's finally independent and he's kind of done it. And then now he actually wants to have somebody else there. So he puts the mask around. And for a second, when the chair started moving, I had forgotten this movie. And so I thought he was moving it to like make it seem like there was somebody else there with him, and then realized it was the snake, right? But he actually like succeeded in living out in the woods and having the independence that he wanted. And then that's all immediately undercut by, the actual dangers of living, right? So he succeeds at being out in the woods, and he succeeds at being independent in the way that he said that he wanted to be. And then that independence comes at a real cost, where suddenly it's very real, right? That he is like holding onto his heart because he might die. Right. So I just wanted to talk about that scene because it's one of the things that I thought about through the whole movie, when they're like music video play acting at freedom, but they're not actually doing that. So I really like that it comes to the point where he actually does have to do those things. Mm-hmm. Right. That he has to deal with what it means to actually be independent and live in the woods and kill things and cook things and face the dangers of living in the woods. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And so I like that you brought up that scene, because that is a great little segment of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And when he kills the rabbit, remember, he kills the rabbit, and after he yells and runs and then stabs it, then he said, I guess we're all hungry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is, he's, you know, again, it's a yeah. little heavy-handed.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's exactly what, so what is he hungry for? Right?
Mm-hmm.
He's hungry for all those things, right? Mm-hmm. His independence, his manhood, his mm-hmm. all those things mm-hmm. is what he's hungry for, and mm-hmm. food. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody in the movie is hungry for things,
yeah.
right? Yeah. They're hungry for each other's approval. They're hungry for, you know, yeah.
No, but with the mask, because that was great that you brought that back as well, because when Patrick gives him the masks,
mm-hmm.
he says, you put them on the back of your head so you don't get attacked from behind,
mm-hmm.
right? So the mask is a protection.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he has the mask and he sets it on the other chair, it's almost like he said, I'm going to take off the mask. Not so much that I want somebody else to be there with me. I'm going to take off the mask that protects me.
Mm-hmm.
And when and the as minute soon he does, that,
oh
yes,
my God.
I know.
Uh-huh.
As soon as he takes off the mask of protection, he's attacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the tempter. You know, he's attacked mm-hmm. by the snake.
Yeah, I think it's important that it was a snake.
It is very important that it was a snake.
Yeah.
You know.
And I was always really sad too that he didn't actually get to eat the rabbit at the end, because he jumped away from the table, and then he was stuck there all night. He never got to eat the rabbit that he had so painstakingly done all that work and finally did it, and he never got to eat his rabbit.
Yeah. And so wrapping it up in terms of my key scene is going to be the finish of the movie,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I always like say, like with the spectacular now,
mm-hmm.
what did that ending mean,
mm-hmm.
right? And so what did this ending mean, right? And so this is question that's the father-daughter podcast, right? Uh-huh. What is this movie about?
Uh-huh.
And so this movie's made in 2013, right? So it's not an old movie. It's still on the cusp of what's happening in our culture right now,
mm-hmm.
I.e. this question, what does it mean to be a man today?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think that's what this movie is asking.
Mm-hmm.
And so although I like to think myself a half-full kind of guy, the ending, you have the ending, and there's all this stuff that happens, right? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we won't do all the hospital, et cetera, except when they're going to leave the hospital. And so there's a great scene with Biagio. And so we won't talk about that because it's super funny. I laughed so hard in this movie.
I forgot how funny this movie was.
I forgot how funny this movie was, too.
I will tell you, I watched this movie on a plane, and the man sitting next to me, I turned the subtitles on so that he chuckled to himself. I think he watched like 90% of the movie over my shoulder, and he was chuckling to himself, too. So he couldn't even hear the delivery, and he was still laughing.
I know.
He laughed really hard during the Biagio camouflage scene.
Oh, and then the Biagio in the hospital scene. Oh, man, it's super just funny all... again.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, then another, there they all are on the elevator together.
Yeah.
So Patrick, his parents, and Kelly,
mm-hmm.
and then Frank and Joe get on the elevator with him. And then they're just about to leave, and you can see the uncomfortableness of the two positions in the world, if you
mm-hmm.
will.
Mm-hmm.
And the elevator door starts closing, and then the nurse stops it, and she pulls the old guy on.
Uh-huh.
So she pulls on third generation.
Uh-huh.
So now you have the young generation, the parent generation, and the old generation. So you really, you have, we don't have a baby. It would be great if we had the baby. But we have the summer, the fall, and the winter.
Uh-huh.
And so we see three of the seasons, right?
Uh-huh.
As there, and so that guy in the wheelchair, he's, you know, he's being wheeled around and he's on oxygen where he's completely helpless, right? And so you see all three of them and nobody says anything. They get in their cars and they're driving away and they're stopped at the light together. He looks over, Joe does, and sees Patrick and he flips him off.
Uh-huh.
And then Patrick does his blowing up my and they have a chuckle.
Uh-huh.
And then the light turns and one car turns left and the other car goes straight.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would suggest is in the one car you have the single adult who's a curmudgeon-y, unpleasant bastard.
Mm-hmm.
And in the car with him is his single son,
mm-hmm.
who's a menace.
Mm-hmm.
And in the other car, you have, you know, the kind of emasculated man
mm-hmm.
who is doting on his wife and then living into her vegetable soup and ciabatta,
mm-hmm.
which is not what men want to do in the summer, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the back seat, you have his son
mm-hmm.
with his girlfriend. And so when they cars separate, I think what's being said is that it is just difficult as a man to escape the role model you have.
Mm.
You will become your father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that you're right. Yeah. And I think that the only like shred of hope, like more and more, like, I don't know, the only, I think that the most tender, affectionate thing that is like said between Joe and his dad, the whole movie is when they're in the hospital afterwards. And his, because in the pivotal, the moment with the snake in the woods, his dad, like, kind of freezes, and he's the adult in that situation. And Joe, having read the book on how to survive in the woods, he's the one that directs them on what to do, right? And his dad in the hospital says, out there in the woods, you were really good.
Yeah.
And I think that was, like, that was a really nice moment just because it was, like, the most tender moment between the two of them, and it was just this recognition maybe of the difference between Joe and his dad, or like this possibility that Joe could do something different too.
Yeah,
that he was like, you were really good, like, you know, he's acknowledging him, and that it was like a moment where he wasn't being a dick to other people or like, you know, busy, like, I don't know, posturing in some of the ways that he did in the movie too.
Yeah.
Right? He wasn't being clever, trying to be clever, and he wasn't doing any of these other things. Like, it was a real moment of crisis and he really stepped up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I'm glad that
the
there was
that. The Set It Up cast?
Yeah.
when it mattered most.
It is. Yeah, you're right. We're gonna always gonna bring it back around to set it up. Yeah, in the moment of, yeah.
He showed a complete abundance of character.
He did.
He jumped in front of the snake.
He did. He was ready to get bit by the snake instead of her.
Yeah.
Even though he had said horrible things to her earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, and so did Biagio. Yeah.
Biagio showed a tremendous amount of character.
Oh, tremendous character.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Joe just went in and killed the snake.
But in that moment when he says, the dad says to Joe, you did good out there.
Mm-hmm.
But then also I think he says, don't think you're a man. You're not a man yet. There's no hurry.
Yeah.
He says something of that kind.
Because he said now, because Joe said something about how he's now a man. Yeah. And his dad was like, you're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think even in saying that, I'm going to just to say, because what he's saying is, you don't want to get there.
Hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. you're in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave the summer.
Yeah, you don't want to be me.
Because the fall is not pleasant.
Yeah. Hmm. So, what do you think this movie was it, what was the message of this movie as a father and a man watching this movie? We're into the boy section of
correct. I know.
Our
I
boy
like,
trilogy.
Thank goodness I didn't have boys, right? They did grow up to be like me.
Yeah.
If that's the message.
Uh-huh.
That I guess for me I would say, and it might be like our boy trilogy, we might have this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of this nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Of the loss of the summer,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
Yeah.
You know, because the modern world does not allow for the extended summer. And so it is kind of this dream, right?
Yeah.
Of having that extended summer.
Yeah. And of also, like, I wonder if this will come up, too, in the other boy movies that we watch, too. Especially the boy movies of, like, open space and the woods.
Yes.
And, like, escape from, like, the city and society.
Yes.
Like, it seems like there's something really powerful about, like, this male rite of passage of, like, going out into the woods and, like, going out and carving things out for yourself.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we will see it in all three of them.
Yeah, and we haven't seen it in any of the girl movies. They
no.
have no inclination to run away into the woods.
No, and we will see it in all three.
Yeah.
Very distinctly. And not only that, but we'll see that in contrast to the fathers who are at home.
Uh-huh.
And so in this one, I mean, the dad literally is sitting in front of the TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And in other ones, you'll see...
The dads
in confined positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brought
and
on
then
by
there's,
society.
And then there's this, this boyhood is freedom and independence.
Yeah.
Free of all of the things that weigh men down.
Right. And so when we watched Set It Up,
uh-huh.
there was that little preamble that you had watched The Kissing Booth before Set It Up. So Set It Up sounds so great to you.
Yeah, yeah. And you had watched Nanette.
Yes.
Yes. And so Set It Up just was garbage.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. But so I have to admit, like, we should also maybe have a new segment, What I Watched Before Watching This.
Okay.
Because I watched this French movie called Les Cowboys.
Okay.
And so it was like this modern take on that John Ford classic, The Searchers.
Okay.
With John Wayne.
Uh-huh.
Do you know the movie?
Vaguely.
Yeah. And so, in a nutshell, you know, the daughter gets taken
mm-hmm.
by Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just relentlessly search for her. And the
okay.
whole movie is their search for
uh-huh.
her. Right? So, in the new French version, you know, it's modern. It takes place in supposedly like 94 or
uh-huh.
something like that. And these are like these kind of French... They're not really cowboys because they actually have city jobs, but on the weekend they go cowboy dancing and they go to rodeos or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of cowboys, but the daughter goes missing at the county fair.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, she ran away with a Muslim mm-hmm. Pakistani.
The modern Indians.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
The modern Indians,
mm-hmm.
right? And so in the movie, the dad just will not stop looking for her. Right. And so this goes back to this wide open spaces.
Mm-hmm.
This dad is on this search. And a lot of the movie is him driving, because he's not riding a horse now. He's driving his car.
Mm-hmm.
So he's driving a Volvo.
Mm-hmm.
He's driving his Volvo and he'll just be driving through the night
mm-hmm.
trying to find her. And he's just going through these wide open, as he's driving all over Europe. And he goes into Africa trying to find her. And he just will not give up looking for her. But it is this thing. And in one point in the movie... the dad actually, you know, not to give away the movie, the movie's really interesting.
Okay.
And so it would be a great one to talk about in terms of, you know, like liminal spaces for adult men or whatever, yeah, right? We should put it on the list. The dad dies, right? And the son has been dragged along with the dad as much as he could drag him.
Uh-huh.
And so the son just never says anything. And the son spends most of his time in the woods with this hermit. And the hermit says, you should socialize more with your friends. Because before you know it, you'll be living in the cabin in the woods eating squirrels. And that's all they say. And then the scene ends, right?
Uh-huh.
And then the dad dies, and the hermit and the son are walking to the dad's grave. And the son said, you know, he died, but he died searching for something. He knew what he was looking for. That's more than most men can say. And so in this movie, right, it kind of, like, they go out in the woods, right, and the snake almost kills him.
Yeah.
And in light of Lake Cowboy, right, he died searching for something.
Yeah.
But at least he knew what he was looking for, which is more than most men can say.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it is this dilemma of the modern man.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is there not any wide open spaces anymore, nobody knows what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the boys didn't even know, right?
I don't think they did.
They just knew that
it wasn't going to be found at home.
Mm-hmm. And so they had to go out and look for it, but they didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then they couldn't find it because they didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And then they just fell back in to where their fathers were.
Yeah.
Whew. So I think we should have a new segment. What I watched before I watched this.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll have to come back around to mine. Because I can't, in this moment, really, like, weave it back in. I was watching the new Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It was not like Cowboy. I think it's interesting, but it's not really related in any way. I don't think really colored my viewing of the movie. So yes, as always, we are sponsored by Sustaina Butter. Yes, thank you, Sustaina Butter. We're again, nutritious nuts that are easy on your digestion. Delicious, super delicious. Official sponsor, without the difficulty of digesting. Yeah, so thank you, Sustaina Butter, for continuing to sponsor the show. We appreciate the support, and we encourage everyone to check out your delicious, delicious butters.
Yes, awesome.
Yeah,
we're to the part now, I think, where we rate the movie.
Let's rate that movie.
Oh, wait, best line to start by far.
Oh my god, we forgot all the... Oh my god, we're way running over time. We didn't talk about any of this.
All right, so rather than argue over who goes first, okay, I'll just go first.
Star by far or best line of the movie?
I'm going to go with both.
Okay.
All right, because I think we need to revisit our rules, but I'm going to think... I think my star by far is going to have to be my best line as well.
Okay.
And so my star by far and my best line is, you're right. This is a typical kidnapping. They took our kids, all our canned goods, and our pasta.
That was a great one. Oh my god, there's so many of them already. I like already can't.
Okay. I had to stop writing. So I'm going to go with the dad as the star by far. And it's easy to go with him because, you know, it's Nick Offerman and that... You know, acerbic wit is just so nasty, right? Just, I filled up a little page of all the things he says that are just so mean.
It's really good.
Yeah, really, really good.
Okay.
But my favorite part, and this is what makes him the star by far, is that he has those brief moments where he recognizes he could be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when the son is going off on his new girlfriend, he was like, I like her, she likes me, it makes me feel better. Can I just have that?
Mm-hmm.
And so he has that brief moment where he's being honest with his kid, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, Joe will not let him have it, right?
Yeah.
And then later he said, am I really a bastard?
Mm-hmm.
And then his daughter says, a bastard would make everybody around him miserable because he is. So he has another moment where he's trying.
Mm-hmm.
He's really trying to overcome this deep-seated assholiness that is him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has a great line. He has lots of great lines. But he also, he's really struggling. And so again, like when we looked at the liminal space, he can't go into it.
Mm-hmm.
He just cannot.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him pushing up against it, like with Spectacular Now.
Mm-hmm.
He would not go into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he won't go into it either. And so I like that he's trying so hard, and you can see his earnestness to try to get into it. He even admires it in his son, when his son was so good in the woods.
Mm-hmm. But he can't do it himself.
Yeah, he could have said, we could do this together, son. But he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So many things he could have said.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just great to see somebody just struggle that hard to get into it, and you can't.
Mm-hmm.
That's my start by far and my best line.
Okay.
Jezebel?
God, there's so many. I also want to shout out when Biagio makes those fake kidnapping things that are super racist. My name is Jamal Colorado.
I went with the Denzel Washington
drop. If anyone needs a fake name, I highly encourage you to use Jamal Colorado. Well, yeah, there's poof. And also, Carol is not a spider woman I found in the gutter. But, oh, God. And there are just so many. I do love the police captain who just, like, just doesn't want to deal with all the idiots around her with the weird Irish racism and the rookie cop who doesn't know when to stop. I just love her utter impatience with everyone. But I think just for fun's sake, I'm going to give it to Eugene Cordero as Colin the boyfriend. And I think one of my favorite lines is when he orders the Chinese food and it was $50. And the dad's like, how was it $50? And he said, well, I ordered a large order of the shrimp with lobster sauce. I really wanted to choose something that was neutral as possible. He's like, that is the least neutral dish I've ever heard of. So he was another vision of manhood right there. His craven desire to be recognized by the alpha male, his serenading in his a cappella group that was during the band played on. But he was also a supportive boyfriend who only wanted the best. Yeah, he was a bit in the Mark Evan Jackson model of manhood that this film presented.
Correct,
but shot for shot, his my level of enjoyment whenever he was around was incredibly high. So I'm going to give it to Eugene Cordero.
Call us, Eugene.
Call us, please. Would love it. All right, let's rate the movie.
And Nick Offerman, do not call us.
We don't want to get any of your barbs.
No, we do not want to be on the other end of those.
I was also thinking about Gary the Delivery Man.
I know. And Biagio, I mean, you could...
I mean, poof, yeah, I mean...
Clearly.
He kind of has to be taken out of the running because he's so...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's clearly in a league of himself.
So let's rate this movie.
Okay.
Is it... You or me first?
You, because
is it me?
You're
it
odds.
Is me. It is me. I'm odds.
And just for the viewers out there at home.
We did write them down this time.
Yeah, so there was going to be no change in our minds.
Okay, so I was thinking about the rating of this movie.
Okay.
I really like this movie. It was a lot funnier than I remembered. I thought that the performances were really good. It was, you know, a bit heavy-handed in its themes. Last week's movie, I said it was a movie made for American Jezebels. Like, that movie was made for me's. This movie, I don't think, was so much made for me, but I thought it was super interesting to see that, and I think that there were some, you know, I would have liked to see a couple of things that weren't in the movie, and it was a little bit overwrought and, you know, seemed like a first-time director. You know, they were, look what I can do kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I really liked this movie. I don't think, and I was thinking about the other movies that we've rated, and I gave, didn't I give Dude like 25,000?
You did, yes.
Yeah, so I didn't like this movie quite as much as I liked Dude. I wouldn't rewatch this as much. So I liked this movie quite a bit, but I didn't love it as much as I've loved some of the other movies. I didn't have any huge issues with it, but there was just a couple things that it was a little bit lacking in that way. So I said I would give this movie 22,497.
Look at you, good enough for even numbers.
Yes.
Well, You know, we're going to have to find a movie we disagree on.
Yeah.
At some point.
We are. We really are.
I know.
Maybe I will hate Breaking Away or something.
I don't know how you could hate
Breaking Away. Who knows? hopefully just for sake of argument.
Yeah. I don't know how we're going to, when we're going to get to one we would just, because Set It Up was our best shot.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So a lot of the same things that you said, you know, that I've forgotten how funny this movie was, and I laughed and laughed and laughed at this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I could watch it again today,
Mm-mm.
even having just
Mm-mm.
seen it like 3 days ago.
Mm-mm.
I don't think I could sit through it. And I really loved that it was from a boy's perspective, and I think it represented the boy's perspective really well. You know, not a lot of noodling, not a lot of, you know, investigation into our feelings,
mm-hmm.
long extended tearing stuff apart,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like their construction techniques were terrible, right? Which is awesome because they would not have had good construction skills.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're building this house really with the wrong tools, right? Which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were so many things about it that I loved because it was so authentic to being a boy. But it would be hard to watch again and again. It would not make it on the island.
No.
Right? And so all the reasons that you said, you know, that it was a little heavy-handed in places, even though I liked what they were doing. You know, I didn't like getting hit that hard with, you know, the allegories and the metaphors and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I rated this at 18,641.
We're super close on this one.
We are super close on this one.
Yeah, and we listeners, we wrote this down beforehand.
Before we discussed it at any length.
Yeah, we did not...
Before I told you what a downer this movie is, because you can't escape the trench that your father digs for you.
It seems to be the theme of so many of these.
Yeah. Oof. That was a spectacular now,
too. You just become your parents.
Or you break away.
Yeah. Which is a perfect segue into the end of the episode. So this is a reminder to join us in 2 weeks for our next film. You want to give them a hint of what that film's going to be?
I think so. From Kevin MacLeod.
It was not. That was live in the studio right now.
Yeah, from Angry Debbie's guitar.
So join us in 2 weeks. Are we going to tell them what the movie is, or is that our hint to them?
Well, we should probably tell them. It's Stand By Me.
We will be watching Stand By Me. I have never seen it before.
And we'll be talking some nonsense. Who's up for talking nonsense?
Thanks for talking nonsense.